This country might make a lot of good things, but it seems like by the time you're old in America, you're pretty crazy. I don't know a lot of old people that have a lot of patience or care to mix very much with people younger than them. You find them going to Green Valley or Sun City or something like that, holing up with other people their age. I talked to a guy last week named Rolling Thunder, who's a Cherokee medicine man, who was quite a bit different from most old men that I've run into. He had a lot of patience, and he seemed to surround himself with young people who liked him quite a bit.
Sun sets. To the Father Sun, to the Mother Earth.
When I was a young boy, lived in the mountains, I had a lot of fun, knew a lot of people, and I loved everyone around me.
The lobby of the Braniff Hotel is a pretty strange place to run into a Cherokee medicine man.
Well, I can still remember.
Rolling Thunder's group took a couple of rooms in that ritzy downtown hotel. They were in town last week for a seminar on some subject like body and mind health. I'd been waiting in the lobby for him while his son, Spotted Eagle, played for me a cassette of a song that a woman in California had recorded. She and Rolling Thunder ran into each other in a store, Spotted Eagle told me. They had a disagreement about something spiritually said, and later she realized the truth of what Rolling Thunder had said, and she wrote that song. Rolling Thunder's manager was there too, along with another Indian man and a big guy in a leather hat. When they spoke about Rolling Thunder, they called him R.T., RT is shaving, the manager told me. He'll be down in just a minute. And in a minute, he came out of the elevator, wearing a flat-brimmed hat, dressed in a white muslin shirt with an eagle and lightning bolts embroidered on the back. And when he sat down, somebody brought the pelt of a small animal with an eagle feather attached and laid it over the arm of his chair. And he looked up and ordered one of his people to bring him some coffee. Of course, he been introduced to me by his son, and at this point I found myself a little confused. A few things seemed to be kind of contradictory. I mean, I didn't figure your basic holy man had a manager, smoked a pipe, which he was doing, drank coffee, had what looked like a bodyguard, and was called by his initials by those close around him. But like they say, nothing's the same these days. All morning I'd been a little bit nervous about the interview, with images of Don Juan floating around in my mind, brought on by the only thing I'd ever read about Rolling Thunder, which was in the last issue of Rolling Stone in that article about the Brujos and having a convention in Colombia. There's just a little paragraph about how the medicine man was doing an experiment in telepathy where he was trying to communicate with people down in Bogota, Colombia at a given hour on a chosen day. Well, the article said that a couple of people got his vibes over those thousands of miles. In fact, one woman received the mental image of a soaring eagle. Little did she know, the article said, with a hint of mysterious suspense, that the eagle is Rolling Thunder's symbol. So that was all I knew of the guy. And while I waited for him, I worried a little bit. I mean, if he can communicate with people in South America, I know he'll just see right through me, is what I was afraid of, and I thought he might even see what I'd done last night. So my nervousness and confusion were just increased by the contradictions that presented themselves when Rolling Thunder sat down. I had to figure out when he wanted me to begin talking to him. I mean, did he want to drink his coffee first? It might turn me into a toad if I started out too boldly, but I threw caution to the wind and turned on my tape recorder.
I think Tuesday. So it won't be on while you're here. We need the time.
I don't like to hurry. It just messes things up, you know, and they don't come up.
Do you want to wait for your coffee, or can I run this thing now?
It shouldn't take very long to bring my coffee. We're getting somewhere. All right, go ahead.
First time I ever saw your name was just last week in the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone?
Yeah.
It's Rolling Thunder, my name.
I know, but there's a magazine called the Rolling Stone.
Oh, yeah.
You had just mentioned
it. Yeah, I know about the magazine. You mean it was in something about it in Rolling Stone?
Yeah.
I read that once in a while when I can get a copy.
Well, there was...
Well, it all turned out okay, really. I mean, Rolling Thunder was a nice guy. Very friendly, and as far as my time spent with him, he was kind and really patient with me. What he said was nothing earth-shattering and new, although some of it was strange to hear and a little hard to believe. Rolling Thunder's message was the same one being sounded by a lot of good people everywhere. We'll ruin ourselves with greed and materialism, was what he had to say pretty much. But unlike many people who come across with that message, Rolling Thunder was unique. I realized, or at least I felt at the end of our conversation, that I talked to a man who not only spoke of kindness, but acted it out in most cases. And that seemed to me to be a pretty rare person.
What are you going to speak on today?
I'm going to talk about healing things and sicknesses and the cause of sickness, but not with just the individual. That sometimes peoples and tribes and nations also can get sick. It's happened before.
You think that there's a lot of sickness now in terms of...
A lot of it. Awful lot of it. And a lot of... also a lot of violence and different things going on that we don't relate to. We don't agree with.
Well,
we don't want to be a part of.
How do you treat that kind of sickness?
That kind of sickness can only be treated in spiritual ways. And creating more understanding among the people, and even with the nature of the animals, and even of the plants, and the natural forces that are Great Spirit's power that's with us at all times.
Seems like, you know, you must spend a lot of your time in cities. It's hard in like just a long stretch of concrete to realize there are natural forces at all.
I don't spend any more time than I can help in the cities.
Well, but a lot of, you know,
sickness in the cities.
A lot of us do, and it's kind of the way we've set it up for us to live, you know, and you kind of forget about animals and plants and any natural.
It's kind of like this, looks like marble, this wall board here. It's some kind of paper. I already tested it. It's imitation. It's that gold over around those mirrors over there. That's not really gold. It's kind of a imitation kind of a thing. And it's kind of like it's symbolic of your plastic society, of what it's coming to. And that it's only imitation, and it's only here for a short time in the scheme of things. That there's more real value. That they're putting too much value on greed and things that are imitation today. And that's the cause of the sickness. And that can be interpret different ways, you know. It can be an individual, or it can be a nation, or it can be on a high level. It could be in the politicians, or it could be even in some of phony gurus, or people say they got 6 million followers and drive Cadillacs. And no American Indian medicine man can do that, because we don't take any money. And our needs are provided for in some way, if we deserve it, and that's all we can do. And we don't claim nothing. We don't. For a Great Spirit's power is the only thing that we can depend on. And we don't claim no 6 million followers either. We say we can take six, and we can do more. Then that other fellow came with the $6 million, and we can. We can help to clean it up, but we won't do it for them.
How do you make people like me aware of, you know, the natural forces?
It's something that has to come with it from within the person themselves. It's a thing, if you seek, you'll find. In other words, if you were going to do a thing like that, I'd suggest for right start with a different kind of an environment. It's not too easy in a city, and hearing these different kinds of noises and things that are not always peaceful, you know. Out there where we come from, out where we live, and you hear the coyotes instead of this kind that you just heard. You hear the coyotes howling. You hear birds in the morning. And that's the music of the nature. And after a while, they can talk to you, or you can go out and associate with them. You can learn to get along with them. You can commune with the nature. And in doing so, though, learn to understand the natural forces, the winds, the sun, the birds and the animals and the elements. But you also learn to understand then yourself, and that you're only one. Your ego, your importance is gone. And you learn that you're only one with all these others. And that's the way, that's the trail.
Isn't it pretty hard to carry that back into the society, though? I mean, that you can get that feeling when you're out where you're talking about.
Not hard at all. The thing is, when you have to return to your own society, you're stronger. And it's just like the tame dogs in a community. And when a coyote comes down among these tame dogs, and they're scared to death of the coyote, of the little coyote, these big tame dogs. They're scared to death of him because they're not going to tamper a monkey with him. They understand that this coyote has a certain kind of a power that they don't have, and they don't understand. And he has his natural instincts, and so maybe some kind of a magic they don't understand. So these dogs, they'll leave this coyote alone. They're scared of this coyote. And the same way with people. People are only afraid of what they don't understand. If they don't understand something, then they fear it. They have a fear of it. And that's why they fear the Indian today. But we don't like people to fear us. We only like more understanding and among all people, so that we get along in a peaceful way and not be greedy and not try to. We don't want to rip anyone off or steal anyone's lands and children, anything like that at all, like what's been done to the Indian and being done.
It ain't easy. It ain't easy. It ain't easy.
we're finding our brothers, especially among the young generation people, more and more, we're finding our brothers wherever we travel all over the world. And so we see these people coming together wherever we go. And ways that the world's going to need more of, peace and friendship and brotherhood. And that's what they've been looking for all the time.
Are you saying that it's like impossible to have those feelings in the city, you know, to be in tune with all
that? It's not impossible, but it's much more confused and it's just harder to do. It's harder to live that way in the cities and under the pressures as they are nowadays. It's just not impossible at all.
Right. It just seems to me that the fact that there are cities and a lot of people living in a small area isn't going to change, you know. And so, I don't know, we're going to have to figure out a way to live with that and make a good thing out of it.
The people have more restrictions, they're under more restrictions and more pressures, and they live a fast pace of life. Like I've seen down in Los Angeles, these wealthy people that invited us there. And they're good people, but they're lost. And they walk around like zombies with a blank look in their eyes. And they hurry in with a briefcase to make $1 million. And they got to hurry to do it. And they'll run over you. And I've seen them drive up in their Cadillacs. And we had to talk to those people kind of rough. And then we play some music for them. Then we got them sit in a circle on the floor and look at each other. But when we left there, they were feeling different, and they didn't have this blank look in their eyes no more.
You think that feeling will stay with them?
I think so. What they wanted us there for was to tell them when the California would go under the water, because their gurus had told them, it pumped them up, that this whole country out there was going to go under water, and so they wanted to know how to get away and when it was going to be the time, when it was coming. And so we had to undo a lot of that stuff, because it wasn't supposed to happen, not at that time, and we knew that. But I also knew, like I explained to them, that Great Spirit is not going to make it easy for anyone to get away if they got it coming, if their karma, and that time comes, that they're not, if it's not meant for them to get away, and if they have done some wrong, or been ripping off their brothers, or done anything wrong, they're not going to get away. There's no excuses, even whether it's business, they want to call it business, or whatever it is. And when you see, like they call it welfare cuts, and I seen old ladies going hungry, and little children, and different place where we went, and we had a little bit of money, so we bought food, and we'd buy food for them. And that's the only way we know how to practice our religion. And we won't tell people what and how to do. We can only do the best we know how. And everywhere we went, we saw a lot of these things going on. And plastic society, you know. And we know by that Milky Way as a sign to us that there's two of them. There's a long one, goes all the way across the sky. That the Indian follows, the Great Spirit's trail, and it goes on and on. And there's another shorter one right beside it, a short one. And that's what they call, we used to call White Man's Trail. I think they call it Establishment now, because, you know, people are different, and there's good and bad in all people. But even so, we might say this way of life that's been brought here, and unless they correct it or clean it up, it'll be very short in a period of time. But in the last days, toward the end, if you study those stars, and like that Milky Way, and toward the end of this period of time, and you'll see some of those stars veering over into the mainstream, the big one, and it indicates that even the white people, there'll be a lot of them that's going to turn also back to the Great Spirit's trail.
Do you think there's going to be a big last day, or don't you think this misery is just going to go on forever?
It's happened before, so it'll happen again. The other worlds were here before, and they have a record about a great flood. Ours goes, history goes back much further, and other times the world was destroyed before that.
Everybody was wiped out.
Yeah, our history is more ancient, goes back more back into the earlier time periods when there were other worlds here that were also wiped out. When the earth needs a cleansing, it gets so polluted and corrupted, you know, that it has to be cleaned up.
So you think we're just heading for a big last roundup?
Yes. It'll be the end of this world as we know it. And it happened before. It's in your histories about the Great Flood or the Bible. And they have that. You can even see the watermarks someplace like up there in Nevada, up on, high on the mountains. It was that way.
Yeah, you think it's going to be something like that, huh? Everybody's going to be wiped out.
Not everybody. There'll be a few survivors, according to our prophecy, but not too many.
To me, that always seemed too good to be true. I just figured, you know, it'd go the harder route, and that would be everybody'd be miserable till the end of time. You know, like that.
Time before the Great Flood, which all peoples know about all over the world, not just those Bible people, but it was here, it was over there, and you, like I say, you can even see the water marks high on the mountains in some places today. And there was a Great Flood. But before that, there was also a destruction many years before that by fire. This one was by fire, volcanoes, and the earth was hot. Now, this next one coming up, but it'll be by fire and water, and it'll be greater.
Can you feel when that's going to be?
I said earlier, we're not gurus. We're not know-it-all people either. And we don't, and Great Spirit don't want people to know exact date and all that stuff, so that if they've been doing something wrong, they can save their hide. Oh, I'd like to give one example on that, because I think it's kind of funny. One man come by my home, and he was heading for the Rocky Mountains. And so he was quite worried. I could tell he'd done something. He had something on his mind, his conscience, that was bothering him, and he was really trying to get away. So he said, you heard California was going underwater, and probably the whole West. So he was heading for the Rocky Mountains. He wanted to know if I had a suggestion, what would be a safe place to go. And I said, well, where did you have in mind? Where are you headed? He said, well, Pike's Peak. He might could get up higher. Now, his gurus had told him, you know, and the dates and everything, and that whole country was going underwater, and so that's a condition, mental condition they had this man in. So he wanted to know if I had a suggestion. I told him, well, I had to have a smoke and think that over, you know, because that's pretty heavy stuff, you know. Golly, so I told him, mister, I want to tell you something. If you haven't been living a good life, or if you committed some kind of a wrong, or been ripping off your brother, or done anything that's not good like that, and your own karma catches up with you, and it's going to do you no good to go to the Rocky Mountains or Pike's Peak, you'd be just as safe, probably better off right down there in San Francisco, because when it comes your time, and if you got it coming, you're going to get it. So there's no need of trying to run away or trying to get away or anything like that at all. And the thing is that people should change their thinking, their own thinking, not be missionaries, but their own thinking. That's where it has to come from. Because all this pollution in the nature, in the air, in the waters, it comes from the mind of a man. If a man thinks a wrong thought when he creates a machine, it's going to smoke. It's going to pollute, and it comes out. It has to come out. There were ancient civilizations right here, and Atlantis, and different places, and they had greater machines. They had greater technology and greater knowledge that is still known today in some places, and they knew how to create the energy, but without the pollution. And so it still could be done even right today if the man who created the machine creates it for good purpose and without a greedy thought. A lot of it is like a sickness or cancer that comes from greed. And that's what we try to stay away from We try to separate ourselves from more and more. And we try returning, many of our Indian people returning to the natural way of life, the great spirit's way of life. And our young people are coming back to us by the thousands.
Some of them were dreamers. Some of them were fools. We're making plans and thinking of the future. With the energy of the innocent, they were gathering the truth. They would need to make their journey back to nature. While the sand slipped through the opening and their hands reached for the golden ring, in their hearts they turned to each other's hearts for refuge. In the troubled years that came before the deluge, some of them knew pleasure, some of them knew pain, and for some of them it was only the moment that mattered. And on the brave and crazy wings of youth, they went flying around in the rain, and their feathers weren't so fine, torn and tattered. And in the end they traded their tired wings for the resignation that living brings, and exchanged love's bright and fragile glow for the glitter and the rouge. And in a moment they were swept before the deluge. Let the music keep our spirits high. Let the buildings keep our children dry. Let creation reveal its secrets by and by.
You think that that sickness then isn't just like in people like me, you know, that live in the city, that are American, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants or whatever they call us, you know, it's Indian people have that problem and everybody has that problem.
Some Indians today have that problem. Some Indians been whitewashed and brainwashed to the extent they don't even know hardly what they are, and ashamed of their ancient Indian heritage and culture. And that don't do them no good, and that's something kind of a hang-up. A lot of them getting rid of it. But what I mean is that it's not really a racial thing. It's just unfortunate that it is something that came out of Europe at a time they had oppressions and inquisitions and were burning witches. And Puritans, state of mind, oppression, and all these different evil things, they come under the guise of religion to hide behind, and so they bring it here.
Yeah.
But they weren't entirely successful, because, especially with the Indian, you know, they say they can't do anything with us. Well, they're not supposed to. They're not supposed to do anything with anybody. We're supposed to be a free person, free individual. And the Indian always has been. We only become unfree if we accept in our mind false teachings, wrong teachings. If we can keep our mind in a pure, like the pagan minds, the ancient peoples, then we can be better thinkers. We can also have technology if we want it, if we need it, if we want it.
A lot of Indians, you know, young men that I have met, you know, see how the white society still, you know, although, you know, we hear stories of slaughters and stuff 100 years ago, it still goes on today in a more modern way, you know, and they get real frustrated, yeah. And they go out and commit violent acts.
Yeah.
You know, what's your thought on that?
That's very true, especially in those cities where there's 30 or 40,000 in Bay Area, San Francisco. I think about 50 or 60,000 in Los Angeles. And they had some big relocation programs. Get the Indians off the reservation. Into the cities, you know, where they got the most menial jobs, lowest paid jobs, if any at all. And there was no future. Now we want them back. We're going to try to get all those people back we can. And out of those cities before it starts. And
what starts?
The final windup. It's going to be oil shortage. It's not the end of it. It's just the start of it. There'll be a food famine, and that's what's going to be coming at you. Then you better watch out, because when people get hungry, and I've been places like that, and I know what I'm talking about, and when they get hungry enough, and it don't matter whether you're a white man or what you are then, and you get hungry enough, that's when you understand each other. And it don't matter what kind of suit of clothes you're wearing, it don't matter how much money you got, your money, there'll come a time your money will buy nothing. It'll be of no value. And when you get hungry enough, and I seen it, and I seen them acting like crazy because that's their past training. And when they get hungry, and the reaction will be to take. In other words, when that time comes, it'll be chaos. You won't be able to buy no police then. You won't have no law and order. You won't have any soldiers. You won't have, and people act like worse than animals, destroy each other. And it's not a pretty picture, but I've seen it. And it's not as far off as you would think. It's not that far off. We won't set no date, but it'll be chaos. I know of some business people getting ready for it, and some of them in high places know about it. And they're going to stall it off as long as they can.
Yeah.
first there'll be people coming up across the deserts. And there'll be a few that'll get away, like along the coast, where there'll be great destruction at that time. That'll be the time. And they'll come across the deserts, and some of them will make it. And whether we have a lot of traditional Indians, and we're going to know how to take care of ourselves. We have our tribes coming together again, our young people coming back home. We see our people coming back together. And we're starting to cultivate some of the native foods that grow real hardy. Even the cold don't hurt them. And they're very nutritional. And we're doing things like that out there. We see these other people coming there, but coming helpless this time, and desperate, and the survivors. And there'll be many of them who want to buy their way in. And the money will be of no value. We're not going to want it. And we'll know who has a good heart and who doesn't. I'm not saying we won't take nobody, but there ain't going to be many of them either at that time that we're going to want. Even today, anybody come to our country, like we're not Christians, we don't do good for evil. And I always tell them, your good vibes, your good feelings is all we need here. I put one man out of my house for having a wrong thought, a violent thought, and that's how strict we are.
Sun sets.
To the Father, Son, to the Mother Earth.